Welcome to Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the long-lived Luke Cutford.
Are you calling me old?
No, you will live long.
Said live, past tense.
Turtles are long-lived.
As a group.
Yeah. Luke Cutford's can be long-lived. So, this week we're talking about old Ozempic and anti-aging agonists. But first, I've got a question for you, Luke.
Okay.
How old are you?
I'm 32.
Ew, that's old. I'm young. I'm not 30 yet.
You're 28.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, in my head, this is a thing that I do. I have to prepare myself for the upcoming age. So, currently, I am 29. Despite the fact that I am 28.
What?
So, yeah, I've had several crises this year where I'm like, oh God, I'm turning 30 this year. And the amount of time it takes me to realize that's next year, I've just psyched myself so up so much for being 29.
Wow.
That I've already hit it in my head.
Being 30 is great.
I'm sure, yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's really good. I really like it.
Well, you're married with a child. Well, yeah. You're not with child.
I'm with child.
Luke is with child. That's why he's been so wonky, you know? That's why his feelings have been so, he's been so low energy because the baby's sucking it all out of him or whatever it is that they do.
Yeah. That's what they do to the mum, I think, for the first few months.
Are you, well, yeah, but like, so your wife had the baby the last time, so you're swapping about, right?
I'm breastfeeding this time.
Well, I mean, carrying, breastfeeding, you know. Birthing.
Yeah. Taking turns.
I'm gonna be honest with
you. That's
Luke.
Equality, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I've never strictly been in a, you know, heterosexual relationship. Uh-huh. Mostly because too bi to do that.
Right.
So I'm not really sure how the whole baby thing works. I am correct in thinking that, you know, obviously you can't do everything that a woman can do, but you do get pregnant with the baby.
Yeah, well, when she gives birth to the first baby, the womb comes out too, and I put it up my bum. And
that's the bit that comes after.
Yes, exactly. That's the placenta.
That's why you eat it.
The placenta is the used womb, and I put that up my bum. I boo for the placenta, and then I make the second one.
Right, yeah. Okay, that's how I thought it. That's how I thought it. Well, I thought you ate the placenta, but I suppose that doesn't really make...
Common misconception.
Yeah.
It would be digested, so you have to boof it. But it does go into the digestive tract all the same because it's been boofed.
Yeah,
so.
And it actually hits it faster, right?
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
So okay.
Straight into the bloodstream, and then you have a womb.
Yeah, don't say that you don't learn things on this podcast.
No.
Yeah, I learn something new every day.
That's true fact.
I wish we could just name episodes what we wanted, because
boofing placenta.
Placental boofing is just such a...
The signs of placental boofing.
There's not a study on that, let's get on it, right?
No. I think there's other things to study first.
How many people can I impregnate in one go so that we want to limit the variables, of course.
You'd have to impregnate them first so that you get their placentas and then you boof them.
Yeah, well, I want the placentas. Well, so I'm thinking...
Is this just you having a breeding kink and covering up with a science study?
Hey, look, but buddy, there are things that are okay to say, okay? I would never use this podcast, okay?
Yeah.
For any personal... You know, any personal sort of motives, any
yeah.
ulterior motives. No, absolutely not. Anyways, I'm thinking octuplets.
Uh-huh.
And then I impregnate all the octuplets at once.
But they're your octuplets.
No, not my. No. I find a group.
Oh, you find octuplets. Okay.
Yeah,
you
I'm
had
not
to
mine.
Specify that.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Hold on. I don't think I need to specify. By the way, I don't think I need to specify that I'm not going to impregnate my own offspring. I feel that's a given.
I think the previous thing you said was that you're going to get a bunch of people pregnant, and then you say, and I'm thinking octuplets, and then I then impregnate the octuplets.
No, yeah,
that
so
follows. That, the original people in the study are octuplets.
Yeah, the okay. pair.
Glad we've cleared that up.
Yeah, the baby carriers are the octuplets.
Okay.
I impregnate all of them that way, limiting the variables as much as possible, right? Like we've got...
They have to all be... Born female octuplets. 8 female octuplets.
Hey, look, it doesn't matter what you're born as, okay?
Well, it does.
They do need to be able to carry a child.
Okay, so they have to either have been born female or they have boofed their wife's placenta.
Of course, obviously.
Okay.
But it needs to be the same wife, crucially, obviously. Because
okay.
It needs to be, this is what I'm saying, I want to limit the variables such that, like, when I impregnate these octuplets, it's genetically
okay,
the same,
so all
right?
The male octuplets have to have previously had children with the same woman. And then boofed her placenta.
Or another set of octuplet women, yeah.
Okay.
They need to be genetic. There needs to be genetics. So then that way I impregnate them, and then do I boof the placenta? Or do...
you boof all of their placentas.
But then I need to get another set of octuplets and have them boof all of, or I could just get two sets of octuplets.
I think you boof all the placentas and then you get pregnant with your own set of octuplets.
But I think I'd be too powerful, Luke. Eight wombs? I don't think it's ever been done before.
I'm looking forward to the section labeled limitations of the study in your study.
The limitations are my rectum is not quite. Look, that boy can stretch, but I don't think it can fit eight whole wombs in there, Luke. There's simply not enough
womb. Oh, good.
Dude, you don't need to. Why you gotta?
I kind of did have
nobody
to.
Nobody knew what was going
to
be.
I had to vaccinate them against that joke before it arrived from you.
Hey, mate, look, nobody knew what that punchline was going to be. It could have been anything.
It could, yeah, I knew, and I think they knew too.
Maybe because you're in the womb with me.
Okay, we're in the same womb.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we're twins.
Oh, God, okay. Is there another six of us?
Well, I suppose actually, just siblings. You don't need to be in the same womb at the same time, you know?
Okay. You've shared a womb, but at different times.
Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants sequel. Mm-hmm. I've not seen it or read it, but Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants sequel. Sisterhood of the Traveling Womb. And they all just, like, you know, it's a group of, the sisterhood has grown up. I don't know what happens. Again, I've never read the book or watched the show. I don't know what it is. But they grow up and they find out they're all infertile except for one of them. And so they then decide to share their womb amongst them. They simply boof each other's placentas. Does it work that way? Or would they have to foof?
What's foof? Oh, right.
Front
I see.
Boof.
Oh, front boof. I think
also foof is another...
They have to front boof it. Only men can boof.
Whoa, dude. That's pretty...
Yeah.
You're sounding a little bit like...
Look, hey, I'm coming out and saying it. Only men can boof placentas.
Wow.
That's a hill I'm dying on.
Bloody JK Rowling over here, am I right? Anyway, so this study, it's called Semaglutide Shows Epigenetic Aging in Slows Epigenetic Aging in a Randomized Trial of HIV-Associated Lipohypertrophy. Can you translate that into normal people words?
You say it again, maybe.
Semaglutide.
No, you lost me.
Ozempic.
Oh, Ozempic.
Those sort of things.
Yep.
GLP-1 agonists.
Yep.
GLP-1 agonists. GLP... glucose, blah, 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 protein,
yep.
Probably.
Yep.
If you see an initialism in sort of a biological context and the last letter there is a P, probably protein.
Okay.
Usually, right? Semaglutide, Ozempic, slows...
Slows down. Yeah.
Well done. Good
I
job.
I thought you said sloths first time.
No. That's like when a sloth really hates someone.
Yeah. Sloths.
Sloths. It's a sloth burn. Slows, retards, makes what's another word?
Ceases, but not quite.
Not even desists. So epigenetic.
The layer above genes where you're like stuff your genetic, it changes which of your genes is expressed, but during your lifetime.
Yes. So I want to be, just want to be conscious of our autistic audience, Luke. Now, when you say a layer above, some of them might be picturing a layer above the genes.
No,
you know?
Not literally.
No. You don't want to wear a layer above your genes because denim, you know, it should be the outer layer.
Okay. It's something that changes the expression of your genes. So you have the same genes, but they're expressed more or less.
Switching them on and off. Yeah.
Yep.
Epigenetics is the switching on and off of genes. You've got your entire genetic code, Luke. One would... Wait, have you got it?
Yeah.
You've not been giving that out?
Nope.
Okay, because...
That's mine.
I have to get on... I don't know if Incogni covers that, you know?
Well, I mean, I've probably given it to some people.
Dude, that's absolutely rank.
No, I mean...
I'm disgusting.
Like, I don't know. Do you give DNA samples to people?
I drop a DNA sample from time to time, but I've never deposited a DNA sample in my doctor.
Okay, right. Move on. You know what I meant.
I know, it's more fun to pretend I don't.
Like the flipping COVID tests. That was DNA samples.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, it wasn't.
No, the way that those work are
it's COVID DNA.
Yeah, it's similar to, oh God, is it a pregnancy test? What is it? It's some kind of test. I think maybe like a pregnancy test where essentially something moves up the medium and it gets
test.
Caught.
Yeah.
The pregnancy test moves up the medium in your COVID test. You have to take a pregnancy test first. If you've not done that, then you've been doing it wrong.
And you have to hire the medium first to make the prediction.
But you got to find the right one, obviously, because some of them are absolute bloody frauds.
Yeah.
We're firing through a lot of stuff. Epigenetic, switching on and off of genes, gene expression, as you're saying. What's aging?
Getting old, getting real old, getting all crusty.
Yep. Aging, getting older, inching
the
ever...
The technical term is crusty, I think you'll find.
Sorry, getting crustier, inching ever forward towards death.
Yes.
And I'll tell you this, Luke, if you... Hold on, sorry, I just needed to... steal myself for what I was about to say, and I do want to apologize in advance. If you are making a lot of DNA deposits, getting crustier is something that will happen.
Ooh, you didn't have to share that.
Yeah,
I could have just, when you steal yourself, you could have decided against it.
No, I look, if I start something, I'm gonna finish.
Okay.
Which is why I've made so many deposits.
Couldn't quite get there. Go on.
Hey. That's the difference between you and me.
Very good.
A randomized trial, you know what that is.
Yeah.
You know, it's randomized. But I don't know how else to explain that. Of HIV-associated lipohypertrophy. So HIV-associated, that's pretty straightforward.
Lipo is fat.
Mm-hmm.
Hypertrophy. Like more fat?
Yeah, a lot of fat. So basically, Ozempic can slow aging. Slow aging that's caused by genes switching on and off.
Mm-hmm.
In HIV-associated fat. Like, people that have got HIV can sometimes get, like, a lot of fat around, I think it's sort of the midriff.
Okay.
That's just something that can happen. Which is interesting, though, because, like, the sort of stereotypical view of someone with HIV is someone with AIDS, where they get very skinny, obviously, mm-hmm. because of the immune effect there. But, yeah, so... lots of fat, basically fat people who have HIV, you give them Ozempic, essentially, and it can slow epigenetic aging, which seems interesting.
But specifically in the fat?
Well, we'll get to it.
Okay.
I think, let's not look too closely into this. I think, first of all, why might you be doing a study on people who are like fat, who have a lot of fat, and giving them Ozempic? Yeah, so you're right. So this wasn't initially a study, I think, about sort of aging necessarily. I think this data was used to look at that. It may have been a study about aging actually, but like the fact is that like it's not about it being in the fat. You're using people who have this sort of fatty deposits because of the drug that you're testing, right?
Okay.
So it's easy to kind of get like hone in and be like, oh, it must be about the fat. But actually, the much more sort of straightforward answer is maybe they're just using that drug because, you know, it's like if they were diabetic, you know, you'd probably be using that sort of drug because it's also used for diabetes. Although in this case, they did not have diabetes. I think that was one of the crucial things. It was non-diabetic people with HIV. So it was published in Nature Communications. I can list off all of the authors, but I won't. I'll just say that one of them has the same name as someone I went to school with. Oh, never mind. They have a different surname. That was, if you chop off their surname, it's the same name. I think
so it's the same first name,
and the middle name is the same as someone's surname.
Okay, mm-hmm. A little bit more than that. Then.
The lead author, I believe, is Michael J. Corley, and I'll just read the part of the abstract here for you. Glucagon-like peptide 1, GLP-1 receptor agonists have attracted interest as gerotherapeutics, yet clinical trial evidence for their effect on biological aging is lacking. We report a post-hoc exploratory epigenetic age analysis of a 32-week randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled phase 2b trial of semaglutide in adults with human immunodeficiency virus, HIV-associated lipohypertrophy. Basically, I don't want to say fat. It's so much fun to say the word fatties, but it's very... No, it's like, it's so rude, but like, it's, I think, watching Little Britain as a child, it's just really, you know...
Yeah, it's just it feels good in the mouth, you know?
Fatties feel so good in the mouth.
It's a pleasing sound, although it's a horrible thing to say.
I'd love a fatty in the mouth.
Hmm.
Okay. No, fatty. I'm not talking about a person. Like fatty, yes, describe. Yeah,
I understood. Yes, I understood the point.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, there wouldn't really be more of a rounded edge.
Okay, how rounded?
Well, that really depends. Look, some are rather pointed, but a fat one, I'd imagine, would be rather rounded,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it'd be. I mean, it'd be like you know, one of those big pencils.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that, sharpened to a point.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No. That'd tear open. Well, where would the placenta go? it'd end up somewhere else in your body. Yeah, you wouldn't want a womb like existing outside of your gut, right?
Yeah, it would just go. It would go on its own little journey.
Yeah, it would be a wandering womb. You'd be. Oh God, how would you describe someone like that?
Probably
like hysterical.
Hysterical, very good.
Okay, I thought that I'm going to be honest. I thought you were doing that on purpose, but
no, that's very good.
That was good. Well done. So, they looked at data from an earlier clinical trial. As I said, there were 108 adults. Initially, 8 participants, which was 15% in each arm, discontinued prematurely. Hey, that's kind of like what you were saying. Discontinued prematurely. I follow through, and you said you can't.
Sorry, I thought you were saying that they died.
That's one way of putting it. No, I don't think so.
Okay, right. I was like, why are you finding this so fun, Corey?
Granted, they didn't... It doesn't say that, but I... You know, maybe they did die.
Yeah, that... Yeah. Bleak.
So anyways, that left 92 who completed the full 32 weeks, and of those, 84 had paired samples available for epigenetic analysis. So 84 people, mm-hmm. Split roughly evenly, obviously, because some people dropped out and all of that stuff. I don't think it's truly 50-50, but, you know, close enough. So why do you think... Oh, I said with HIV-associated lipohypertrophy. I thought I was reading why. I'm not going to ask you why. I don't have the answer to that question. Some more inclusion criteria. So they had to have a BMI of 25 or greater.
Mm-hmm. Obesity... it's obesity, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or is
yeah.
it overweight?
I think it's over. I don't know.
I think it's overweight. It's not obesity. No.
I'm gonna be honest. I think it, as we've discussed, BMI is mostly nonsense. Like my BMI has always been, I think, 25 or above, right. Which is even when you take into account Black people being different, just in many ways. But specifically with BMI, I have to put in if I go to get my BMI from the NHS or whatever, I have to put in my race. It's different.
That's interesting. Okay, and so there's that. Was that the headline number is different? Based on race.
Yeah, the calculation, I guess, is slightly different. Even though, like, the BMI is just sort of what? It's height versus weight or something. Yeah. It's like one divided by the other, something along those lines. There's a different rubric, apparently. Mm. I don't know. Racism. Who knows? And also, as I've said, they needed to not have type 1 or type 2 diabetes or cardiovascular disease. Half of them had weekly semaglutide injections. The other half were given a placebo. And this is apparently the first randomized placebo-controlled evidence in humans that semaglutide may slow the buildup of DNA markers linked to biological aging in adults with HIV. All of the links, obviously, in the description. But basically, yeah, apparently this is the first time we've been able to show that, in this kind of study, that people, that you can slow aging, epigenetic aging.
Now, do people with HIV have accelerated aging?
Well done. Yeah, that's okay. Why literally the next thing I've got here in my notes, yeah. People with HIV often experience accelerated biological aging. Do you know why that might be?
Well, it's messing with your immune system, isn't it? So I'm guessing, but it's not yet turned into AIDS. So it's not, your immune system isn't attacking itself. Oh, because they're on immunosuppressants.
Well, they're on immunosuppressants. But I think are they on immunosuppressants? Yeah, yeah. But it's also, is it immunosuppressants?
Maybe they're not.
No, it might be an immunosuppressant, but I don't think it is. I think it's something that brings down the virus in your, the virus levels in your body.
Yeah, because they're not, it's not transferred into AIDS yet. So it's not actually, it just has the potential to become an immune system attacking itself.
Yeah.
It's not yet done that.
Yeah, maybe I should have looked into this more, but you know what, Luke? This isn't a science podcast. The comedy science podcast.
The bar is so much lower.
Yeah, it's so much lower. And you don't even need to be that funny. So long as you laugh, people will think, hey, that's funny.
I'm the laugh track, basically. That's what I'm here for. Hey, that's my job. Whoa, freaky. Don't like that. That made me genuinely made me jump. Oh, stop it.
Sorry.
Stop it. I don't know what's real anymore.
Nothing is real. So people with HIV, there's accelerated aging. I think it's due to just inflammation. So I've got here a persistent low-grade inflammation and metabolic dysfunction, even when it's suppressed, by antiretroviral therapy.
Okay.
They're still, having HIV, but being on, say, I think PrEP or whatever mm-hmm. the one it is. I think PrEP is maybe for before. I can't remember, Luke. But
PrEP stops you passing... No, PrEP it stops you getting it.
It stops you getting it, but there's also one that... there's different ones,
okay.
I think. But basically, you can take a drug that stops you from being able to pass it on, and also there's one that stops you from contracting it if you are exposed. I'm sure there are, like, edge cases there, but broadly, right? It's very much not the case as it was, even a couple decades ago. Mm-hmm. So we've already gone over sort of the cohort. 42% women, but men were slightly overrepresented in the in the semaglutide groups, so the ones that were actually receiving the treatment, 58% black, 38% white, 11% Hispanic participants with nearly identical distributions across groups. I think this is probably kind of skewed by the fact that by who gets, like, who's more likely to get HIV, etc. Yeah. Not that black people are more likely to get HIV for, you know, racial reasons,
no,
but, like, you know, social reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just socially, just HIV is really big in the black community, man. I don't know. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff I could read here about them. But headlines, I've already told you the breakdown. One third current smokers, another quarter former smokers. I think all of their...
Wow, one third current smokers. That's high for the population now.
Well, if you think about who's most likely to get HIV today, intravenous needles, drug users, gays.
Ah,
both groups who
smoke.
Yeah, man, big smokers. There's a joke that I can make about gay people sucking on cigarettes, but unfortunately that wouldn't play outside the UK.
Yeah.
So you'll just have to use your imagination.
It wouldn't play that well in the UK either these days.
I can say it. So they've all, I think all of their sort of the HIV, what's it called, a virus sort of in their system, is they were all quite low. They had low levels of the virus. I think some of them were slightly above some kind of lower boundary, but they were all broadly quite low. And so what do you think the sort of results that we saw? I've already told you broadly what the results are, but they were looking at, I think, three different or multiple different epigenetic sort of clocks that are tied to like sort of health of the blood, brain, heart, kidneys, liver, etc. Things that tied to sort of inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think happened with these sort of markers of biological aging? Like, what sort of, if you were to put a number on it, what sort of percentage of difference?
Okay, well, for this to be exciting and be clinically significant, I'm guessing it, especially with quite a small sample group, it's got to be fairly dramatic. I'm going to go like 50% slowing down, 50% reduction.
So a 9% slower pace of biological aging based on, I think it's the Dunedin pace epigenetic clock, so based on this one sort of set of markers, mm-hmm. And a significant slowing of biological processes linked to age-related disease and all-cause mortality risk as measured by another kind of epigenetic clock. So I've got to say this, which is a quote from the scientist: we're not saying that semaglutide reverses aging or makes people younger, even though that's probably the title of this episode.
Yep.
What we're seeing is a signal that it may slow some of the biological processes associated with aging. With newer GLP-1 based therapies now emerging, the field has an opportunity to test whether different drugs in this class have distinct effects on aging biology and to identify which patients might benefit most. That's Dr. Michael Corley, who's associate professor at UC San Diego School of Medicine and the Stein Institute for Research on Aging. I believe the lead author.
I mean, it's interesting that he's even gone so far as to say that, where it said it may slow down some of the biological markers of aging, because it may do that, but it may only do it in people with HIV who've already got accelerated aging.
I believe that's not that. So they want to look at this more because I think it can apply outside of just people with HIV. I think people with HIV are a good first sort of look at it, because it would be sort of more pronounced. They've got, say higher, they age more quickly, essentially, right? Biologically speaking. And I kind of want to say as well that it's probably worth talking about this, where I mean, I don't know too much about this myself, obviously, because I'm not a scientist, especially not a scientist studying this. But I think that when we hear or see these sort of headlines, immediately we go to like, oh, cool, you don't age anymore. That's awesome. But slowing down aging, you know, might not necessarily mean, oh, you live.
Yeah, because not like, everyone dies of old age.
Yeah, exactly.
You could still get any of the illnesses that might kill you. You could still get hit by a bus. You could still have any of the other reasons someone might die that are not just purely the signs of you aging.
Exactly. But it does maybe mean that we can be more resistant to some diseases, you know, like cardiovascular disease, like aging of your organs and such, right? And so that could result in living slightly longer. But at present, I think it'd be a bit much to say, oh, this is a drug where if you take it, you can slow down aging to a really, really noticeable degree. I think this is one of those things where we kind of start off looking at this and we're like, okay, well, we can make incremental sort of changes to, to sort of quality of life and as we age, and to, you know, how we age overall as a population. And, you know, obviously the lifespans have been getting longer and longer and longer. I think for a bit, maybe they got a bit shorter when record keeping got better, but but yeah,
those oldies,
yeah, but like this might only result in like a couple years or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, even if we were to say, and that 9% change in aging resulted in 9% more time, which is, I want to be clear.
Yep.
I am certain that is not how it works, yep. But even if we were to do that, 9% of 80 or so years is still less than a decade.
Yeah, but you're also not going to be taking semaglutide just as an anti-aging drug. You'd have to figure out what is actually happening, because it has so many other effects on, you know, your body, because it's primarily a weight loss and diabetes drug. You're very unlikely to be ending up taking purely semaglutide, because people who don't need to lose weight presumably might lose weight if they take semaglutide and they're not already overweight.
I think I can't remember. We did a whole episode on it, so go and watch that. But I think part of it is not necessarily having the drive to sort of eat, so it can curb those sort of snacking influences. Yeah. And then you kind of would then eat what you kind of need to. So maybe, like, yeah, it probably could make you become deathly skinny, but there's also the chance that, like, it might just have you level out at a certain point. I'm not really sure. There are other aspects to it as well. But
it also makes you not want to drink alcohol, apparently.
Well, I think it cuts down on cravings, yeah, generally, is right. One of those main mechanisms there. But again, go and look at the Ozempic episode that we did,
because
my memory's not that good. Clearly aging too much. But there's another study as well, so that found that biological aging slowed in 42% of participants based on one of the same epigenetic clocks there.
That's just non-HIV, that's just everyone.
I think this was also in HIV patients. I can't remember, but it's all linked below, so I would go and double check that. But what's interesting here is not just the sort of liver fat reduction, but the telomeres. Do you know what a telomere is?
Yeah, it's the little bits of what we kind of like junk DNA sort of thing at the end of your DNA that basically you can afford to lose. It might not be junk DNA, but it's like it's stuff you can afford to lose, basically, and that breaks rather than your DNA breaking.
Yeah, so I think it might be junk DNA. Again, uni was a long time ago, but yeah. I think junk DNA might be, it may refer to something more specific, but yeah, broadly, I mean, you're spot on. Sort of protective ends of DNA. So basically, every single time, DNA replication is awesome. It's great. It's very, very good. It is not perfect, right? So every single time your DNA gets copied, which will happen, you know, whenever your cells divide, for example, that, you know, it has to happen there. The ends can kind of get lost, you know, and there can be damage to your DNA as well over time. That's why you've got to avoid, you know, lots of UV radiation, because could cause cancer, other sort of things like that, right? A lot of aging is caused by just damage over time to your DNA. But yeah, these nearly 40%, 9% of participants in this other study that I mentioned showed longer telomeres as measured by a different sort of epigenetic clock. So yeah, like, that's pretty crazy. 49% longer telomeres. I don't know how much longer the telomeres were, but that is one of the key things we look at when it comes to slowing down aging and sort of stopping aging, because it is you know, it is one of the main factors. If you look at sort of some animals that are very long lived, or very resistant sort of cancers, or sort of dying of old age, which would really be just your body kind of getting worse and worse and worse at continuing to be alive until
function.
Yeah. Yeah, until something like dying of old age doesn't exist. You just get
something gets you. Yeah, that is associated with longevity.
Yeah, you get weak enough to the point where like a flu can take you out, you know?
Yeah.
They also, those participants tended to walk faster after treatment, which apparently suggests improvements in physical function. Apparently these medications might just have, you know, these sort of beneficial effects on aging, like these sort of the biological sort of biological pathways involved in aging, which is really, really interesting, because, you know, I remember when this sort of came out, we did the episode on it, and I looked into it being like, oh, this is going to be one of those fad drugs, it's going to be one of those things where there's a problem with it, right? That's unforeseen. But thus far, doesn't seem to be many negative side effects, and they're finding more and more positive things. Again, it's not like a miracle drug. It's not going to make you young and skinny forever. But it is interesting that there's at least research being done in this area.
It's the closest thing we've had, I think, in my lifetime to like that feeling of like you find one thing, and then every week goes by and it turns out it does another thing that's great, and then it turns out it does another thing that's great, like you'd see in some film about like discovering some wonder drug. Obviously, yes, not a wonder drug, but like it is interesting to watch it be like launched as this what originally diabetes medication, turns out it's good for weight loss, and then oh wait, turns out it reduces cravings in alcoholics, oh wait, it turns out it might reduce aging in people with HIV. It is the closest experience we've had, at least in my adult life, to like we've stumbled upon something amazing, and it just keeps on giving new stuff. And although, yes, it feels like a new thing, and so it's scary, like what's it going to do, what long term is it going to have problems. I was actually listening to a thing about this morning, which is like there is, you know, we do have 10 years of evidence, granted not in quite such high doses, but we do have 10 years of evidence of it being used in diabetes. So it's looking, fingers crossed, like, you know, we've got more data on that than we have for other things when they first come out. So exciting.
Yeah, very, very exciting. And I'm glad you pointed out that, you know, be cautious about it being a miracle drug, because it feels, you say the first time in your lifetime, this feels like plastic to me. Obviously, plastic is, you know, before our time, and yeah, obviously still, but like, I feel like human sort of progress is, oh my God, we've just found this amazing thing. Oh, it's killing us.
Uh-oh, oh my God.
There is stuff in the ground, and if you burn that stuff in the ground, it makes water go boil, and it water go boil move thing, and then we move thing without using horse or self. Amazing. Oh God, planet too hot.
Can't breathe.
Can't breathe. Yeah, no. Or plastic. Like, oh, you telling me that you take this dead animal and plant juice from ground, and you process it, and it makes this amazing product that is durable, that it lasts forever, and
oh God, it's lasting forever.
Oh God, it's lasting forever. Oh God, it's durable, so it's breaking down. When it breaks down, it doesn't completely break down, and it's now inside of us.
No.
Whoopsie.
It's
yeah,
in the skin of my children.
Literally, man. It's
in their ovaries. It's everyone's ovaries.
It's in everywhere. Yeah, I mean, it's really. Or like, you know, radiation, right? Like Marie Curie being like, oh wow, let me study this thing. I died from it.
Yeah.
Being able to, you know, what is it? This pre-nuclear steel where you can tell when, like roughly how old a piece of some kind of steel or something is based on how much sort of radiation is sort of polluted. I think, is it carbon or something, whatever it is. Basically, we've had such a massive impact on the environment that you can tell how old something is because of how irradiated it is broadly. The fact of it is a bit more sort of specific than that. But like, yeah, we have massive impacts on our environment, and we take big, big, big swings. And so there's so many misses. It's like hitting a home run, and then
comes back, goes all the way around the earth, and then knocks you in the back of the head.
As you're getting to home.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, we know baseball.
Yeah.
Is this too inside baseball?
We're two cool guys, aren't we? two normal dudes, I think.
Just two normal American homegrown dudes.
Yeah, made in America.
Well, I was made in America.
Were you?
Yeah.
I was made right here.
In this
in
house?
The US of A.
You were made right here?
Yeah.
That's pretty genuinely freaky, terrifying.
Yeah. Right on the floor, right there, between us now.
Okay, don't want to...
Yeah.
I know both of your
no
parents.
No more thoughts.
And I know that one of them listens to this.
End of the thoughts now.
I'm not cutting this out, by the way.
You don't need to think anymore.
You said it, and you're going to have to sit in it.
Closing my ears and shutting off my brain.
Sort of mechanisms. It's essentially, they can reduce inflammation and improve metabolic health, which is sort of that sort of immune activation thing, right? It reduces that, which means there's less, I guess, damage to your sort of DNA, or essentially limiting all of these things that cause aging. Lower levels of fat as well, because having like really like having a lot of body fat can put more strain on your body, and then, you know, increase sort of rate of aging to some extent. So it's all really interesting. I've got a quote here again from this lead author. Emerging data also suggests that GLP-1 drugs may reprogram certain cells in different organs, which would help explain why we see effects across multiple aging clocks. So it's not just hitting one sort of specific thing. It's a bit broader than that. It's sort of hitting multiple routes. So it does really feel like a miracle drug, but I'm sure in a decade we'll find out that actually, I'm looking forward I get, not looking forward, but I can see a sort of Children of Men situation where in 10, 20 years, everyone's on it, and oh no, it actually makes your children infertile. No one can have children anymore, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah, that would be the one.
Literally.
Or like we completely 360, like how we talk about how before we had a scarcity world where we didn't have enough sugar, and now we have way too much sugar, and we've like lots of people are overweight and we're all eating too much sugar. And then we go the other way and we're like, now we just don't want to eat at all. Mm-hmm. Somehow changed our genetic code, so we actually just aren't interested in food. We all have to force ourselves to eat lest we starve.
And yeah, we starve to death, man.
Yeah. And then we'll just look at that, oh, we had such a wonderful world full of plenty and we kind of screwed it up.
That's just it. That's
and we're
the
just
going to
ricochet
yeah.
between those two extremes forever.
That's it. That's the human race. Ricocheting between extremes yeah. and never learning. But
they learn each extreme. But they yeah, never have a meta-learning of like, maybe we should stop doing extremes.
Cigarettes,
have you heard of this new wonder drug?
Cigarettes are bad for you. And, you know, we thought they were good for a while. We advertised them to children. But, and you know, kids were having them and it was bad. We know that now and we'll never do that again. Do you want a vape? Do you
Yay.
Want a vape, kid? There's also just a quick thing here I'll say about apparently activity, being more active as well, sort of like all of those other sort of healthy things that you could do, like eating well, exercising, all of this sort of stuff can have cumulative effects. So it's not just a case of just taking this and you're done with it, but taking that and sort of being more active, it all helps. It all sort of works together. And I guess the sort of last thing I want to mention on this about sort of why it's useful. So you mentioned sort of, oh, does this only work in HIV patients? But a quote here, again, from the lead author, many of the biological processes we study in HIV are also central to aging in the general population because these processes can emerge earlier or be more pronounced to people with HIV. This community can help us identify interventions that may improve health span more broadly. Health span being the sort of number of years that a person remains healthy and free from major age-related diseases. Mm-hmm. Basically, before you get old, and sickly.
Yeah, okay, that's good. It's good that it looks like it might work in other people. I guess that it just means that the people with the accelerated aging in HIV, it means that you can detect that effect more early because the rate of change in them is so much higher.
Mm-hmm.
Is that why, do you think? Or?
Well, it's from what I've read there, it seems that you know, instead of sort of doing this on more elderly patients, which can have like a number of other sort of issues, doing it on younger, perhaps more generally physically fit, in some cases, and when I say physically fit, I mean like less sort of frail, maybe, mm-hmm. HIV patients, means that, you know, while this is all accelerated, it's maybe a bit more pronounced. And so it's just much easier to run these studies on sort of younger, generally younger cohort, a sort of middle-aged cohort, rather than waiting for people to show all of these sort of signs of aging, whilst also being very, very old. Am I making sense?
Fine, yeah. I was just purely wondering why we haven't observed it in the many other people who are currently taking Ozempic and don't have HIV.
That's not to say that we haven't,
right?
You know, that's just this. These are the sort of first few studies on this. Mm-hmm. So you've got, because these other people who are taking it will probably be, if they don't have HIV and they're younger, then they're not going to be showing these signs of aging as strongly. And so, you know, if these sort of signs of aging start to happen later in your life,
yeah.
then, you know, if it happens earlier for HIV patients, you're probably more likely to notice mm-hmm. it. So it's I think it's just more of that rather than this only works for people with HIV. Mm-hmm. If you think about people who age sort of prematurely with HIV, it's not necessarily a case of... It's basically just a case of it being accelerated, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're putting more strain on your body. And so it's all of these sort of things happen earlier. Like how if you sort of, if you put strain on your body in another way, wear and tear, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to wear faster in that sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the last thing, they want to do these thing called aging dashboards, like personalized aging dashboards based on epigenetic clocks. So basically, making so that doctors can sort of monitor how people are aging with more sort of precision.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, try and find more underlying causes of age-related diseases I've got here, which is quite interesting. Like the idea that like using, even if we don't necessarily use this drug as an anti-aging drug, what we learn from it, we could then use to have a greater knowledge on aging as a whole, which we can then apply elsewhere. So even if we don't use this drug on people, the right. knowledge that we learn from it can still be useful in a broader sense.
About aging.
Yeah.
Like generally about aging, yeah. No. You see the guy who was trying to make himself young forever thinks he's going to give it up?
Yeah, I saw, thank God.
Yeah.
We've spoken about him before, and it's like he's the one that would, He would like drink his son's cum or something.
Yeah, you did say that.
A big old pint.
I never knew about that. I never read about that bit, but I read about all the other things he was doing, like extremely strict sleep programs and stuff. So yeah, it'd be interesting.
Boy's gonna go to waste anyway.
Maybe he's just gonna. Do you think he'll just now age really quickly?
I think all the stuff he's done to his body is probably. I don't think he's aging more slowly. Yeah.
Yeah, he just looks like he's had plastic surgery. Anyway, well, we can give him some Ozempic and he'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure. Is there anything else you want to say, Luke? Because we're coming towards the end. Just one last final bit.
Well, you know,
too late, Luke. Oh. It's the end of the show. That is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons, especially Cody. Thank you, Cody.
You just pick a random one every week now, don't you?
Honestly, Cody is one of the few whose names springs to mind.
Rev Lunar?
Yeah, Cody Miller, Glitch Rabbit, yeah. Rev Lunar.
Sick.
They're all cool.
Thank you.
Thank you. You can find and contact us at SciGuysPod.co.uk.
That's SciGuysPod.co.uk. SciGuysPod.co.uk.
You can follow me at NotGore everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCupworth everywhere.
And you can follow us both to the Patreon.
Ah, off you go. Off you go.